We are running about 15 minutes behind time, so I'm going to ask Dirk Hondell to come up and to give us his presentation. Dirk is with Intel. I've known Dirk a long time, and I know that he would not mind my asking him to assist by trying to cut the overrun a little bit, but...
Can someone turn the projector for me?
Turn it off?
Yeah.
Dirk?
Am I on?
It's your floor, and I'd like all of you to show your appreciation for Dirk's being here.
Thank you. Am I? Can you actually hear me? Is the microphone on?
Yes.
Oh, good. That's a good start. So it's always fun to come back to Göttingen. The weather is gorgeous, as always, in Germany. But then again, I live in Portland, Oregon, so this is gorgeous. My name is Dirk Hondel. I'm the chief Linux and open source technologist for Intel. thank you. Have been doing this for a while. I've been doing open source for something like 20 years. I'm a Linux developer. Some of you, the Germans here in the room, might know me as the former SUSE CTO. Intel actually is a company that does a lot of work in open source, a lot more than most people realize. I mean, I guess the same is true for Microsoft, which does a lot of work in open source, a lot more than people realize. I guess in 2009, I need to spend less time on why am I here and why are we doing open source and why is this important than I did when I started at Intel a good 7 years ago. But it's still interesting to see how people are very surprised about how much a chip vendor engages in that. It seems to be very perplexing to people. But at the end of the day, without software, our chips are great at heating the room. The new ones less so than the old ones. But that's not why most people buy them. So software is very important to us. We have a great relationship with Microsoft, a great relationship with a lot of other proprietary software vendors. But we also want to have a great relationship with the open source community. The fun part about open source is that our relationship can be very different. We can actually engage, you know, be there, be part of it much more than we can anywhere else. So when I came up on stage, I asked John to turn off the projector because I hate presenting with slides. No offense to the friends from Microsoft, PowerPoint makes stupid. The whole concept of having slides that tell you what I'm going to tell you seems very perplexing to me. The idea that I need to make you actually split your brains between visual perception and audio perception, especially as for many in this room, just like me, this is a foreign language. Let's not do that. So I'll just talk, you just listen, then you yell at me, and everyone is happy. Who of you was here last year? Oh, this is good. This is very good. Not a lot of people were here last year. I gave a talk last year. Wasn't the most popular talk. I managed to piss off about half of the audience. And so when I talked to my wife that I wanted to do better this year, she said, make sure you understand better does not mean pissing off all of the audience. I'll try. So, mobile devices. The title of the talk is Authentication Challenges in the Mobile World. Mobile devices have changed dramatically in the last few years. The things that used to be called smartphones a few years ago and they were incredibly stupid and useless, to something like almost usable today, the iPhone, or since I always am a contrarian, the Google Android phone. There's another one in the audience. I mean, they're almost useful. They're still some things like battery life on this device when I actually use it. So 3G is on, GPS is on. I use the Wi-Fi. I actually do something with it. Can be measured in minutes, literally. I mean, Don't think about 8 hours of use on a device like this. That's pathetic, but that's a different story. That's not why I'm here. And of course, the next generation devices, my employer, of course, has all these grand visions of what's happening. Many of you may have heard of Moblin, which is Linux for mobile devices that we're working on, and that, of course, will revolutionize the world, like everything we do. But actually, I'm not here to talk about our products, which is kind of a weird thing to do for a keynote, because obviously everyone else gives keynotes to talk about their products. Stormy Peters, who is the executive director of the GNOME Foundation, on Twitter last night or this morning, depending on your time zone, said, so aren't keynotes about entertaining the audience? So what does that make keynote speakers? To which I said, obviously entertainers. So I'm not going to bore you with a product talk. Instead, I'm going to actually try to learn something from you, which is kind of weird since I'm the one doing the speaking, but we'll figure this out. What I'm trying to do is talk about a problem that I see and that I actually see firsthand since I use these mobile devices, and a problem that is largely ignored in the larger user and provider space, and about some ideas how to address them, and hopefully you'll have better ideas than I do. So relax, enjoy, and don't take me too seriously. The average next generation mobile device, and I say next generation mobile devices because today's devices still frustrate me too much. So what do you do with them? So you turn them on, and it's a 3G device, so you type in your PIN. Then, since it's a Google device, Jeremy will want this to be a Google device, you log into your Google account. Then you want to check your email that, since I'm paranoid, is not sitting on Google servers, so I authenticate with my email provider, which in my case is myself. I want to Twitter, so I log into my Twitter account. I want to check Facebook, I log into my Facebook account. I use Bookkeeper to keep track of the books that I read, log into that. I'm an active blogger. I actually have two blogs. I have like a hidden secret blog for my family and pictures, and the public blog where I pretend to know stuff. So I log into those two blog sites. I'm an avid photographer, so I log into Flickr. I think you're getting the pictures. The picture, singular. There is a lot of logging in going on. A lot of what you do with these devices requires you to authenticate to some kind of service. Now, I actually use this device, my Android phone, as my personal device, not as my Intel device. If that was my Intel device, Intel IT would force me through their brilliant idea of single sign-on. So everything would be driven through a single UID password combination. It's a great idea in a captive environment, and it's something that a lot of people talk about even for non-captive environments, because it makes everything so simple. You log in once and you're authenticated. Of course, if you turn this around, this is a huge risk, because if that one credential is by some means spoofed, taken away, exposed, your life is exposed. If people can blog for you and send email for you and log into your bank accounts and, oh my God, Twitter for you, that would be really disastrous. Even though, actually, there are a few people that I follow on Twitter, and I often think they have many other people Twittering for them. It's very weird. People on the internet behave very differently from people in real life. You talk to people, they're really, sane, normal, rational people, and whoa, dropped something. And then you read them on the internet, and it's like strange things are happening to people. Anyway, so have any of you checked the security of these authentication mechanisms? I just happened to stumble across that when I used the new Twitter application. I hate to keep banging on Twitter, but I started like 4 days ago, so I'm excited right now. Always late on these new fads. And I download this new Twitter application, and somewhere in the release notes it says, oh, now we are offering an option to enable SSL, but it's off by default because it's really CPU intensive. Excuse me? You are sending my password clear text over an unencrypted wireless link. Okay, that's kind of cool. And so after I looked at that, I'm like, okay, let's look at the other things that I use. And it's completely mind-boggling how many of these services either use literally clear text over the wire, or use rather simplistic schemes for making sure that you're safe. The PEM via SSL kind of things. You basically trust that whoever you're talking to through this encrypted link is somehow related to who you want to talk to. And it's all done with certificates, but come on, who has ever really tested the certificate for validity as long as they're signed by some CA? And this is a social engineering experiment I've done to my coworkers, who will always love me for that. We kind of switched out the master certificate on a build of our internal OS so that all of the internal sites now showed up with invalid certificates, and people had to just accept the certificates. Not a single person complained. Everyone just accepted the new certificate. And Google has this brilliant thing where they send you this encrypted cookie that then enables everything for you, except that if you hit the right moment, there is actually, to reduce the load on the server, you can actually intercept this cookie while it is unlocked, and then just put it on your machine, and then I can and read Jeremy's email. And not that I'm interested in Jeremy's email, but I could. So there is something wrong with the way authentication is done today. And one of the things that is, there is somebody with a camera coming in. That's not looking good. Part of what is wrong is that most of us simply assume that the people who are doing this stuff actually know what they're doing. And are keeping our privacy and identity safe, and we don't need to worry. And everyone in Germany, how many of you are Germans? Okay, so everyone in Germany knows how well Lidl and Deutsche Bahn and Deutsche Telekom are taking care of our identity and our privacy and our data. Yeah. Okay. So the problem is this is your employer giving a crap about your stuff. Now here is this vendor that gives you a no-cost service, yet you kind of trust them that they do something smart and well thought through. Don't think this is how it works. So what would I like to see? I like this whole idea of a ticket system. So instead of giving everyone my real credentials, I just give them a ticket that, in a way, is organized so that it conveys my authenticity, my who I am. God, English, I can't speak English. Spoke too much German last night. Conveys who I am to them. And of course, this is very much like Kerberos. So it's the generic security service infrastructure as implemented by Microsoft or MIT or many other companies. Now, speaking in this room, the actual joke of this, of course, completely does not register with you guys, because there is an implementation of all this in open source, and it's called, let me think, Samba, right? Of course, no one realizes that. So if you go to any arbitrary open source event or non-open source event and ask the developers, is there an implementation of GSS, of this complete infrastructure that we need in Linux? They all say, no, that's missing. So what does Samba do? Samba is a file server, right? So this is one of those best kept secrets that most people don't realize we actually have the infrastructure to do that. We, in this sentence, by the way, is the open source community, which means everyone. Yet all the services that we use assume that the clients are stupid, the client, not clients as in customers, the devices, and that they couldn't deal with this, and so fall back on the PAM via SSL kind of, if they do SSL, on the PAM kind of user authentication methodology. Why is that? Because you want to have people from different clients be able to connect. Whoa, it's like on the seventh day he says no, it's a different one. Where was I? That threw me. So the assumption is, yes, if I know that I only have Microsoft devices connecting, I can use something like this. But on all the other platforms, it doesn't work. But the reality is that this is, it exists on Linux. It's easily ported to any common OS, even things like Symbian. So you could extend a different means to authenticate on your mobile devices very easily to all the mobile devices that are out there. Why isn't that happening? Why is the assumption in this industry that I need to allow people to set their UI, their username, and set a password and have the very weird, what's the name of your first dog, so I can reset it? Or, you know, why isn't there the assumption that I can create a secure channel of communication between the service and the client, which especially on the mobile client I want? So I authenticate once that I myself at the beginning of the session when I turn it on, and that should be configurable. And after that, my device can say, yeah, I know, I'm Dirk, here I am, you know me, don't worry about it. And we could build this whole infrastructure that would make these devices, A, a lot easier to use, and B, oh, by the way, much more secure for us as end users. Well, one of the reasons why this isn't happening is it is very hard for the different competing or complementing companies to agree on one authentication scheme. I mean, that is, I have the incredible fortune of having a very weird last name. So trying to get Hondel at any service is very, very easy. If you're John Smith, not so much. John Terpstra, that might be better. Terpstra is not that. I don't know. Anyway, so there is this competition for your identity. There is a lot of services actually turn this artificial thing, the username, into your identity. Again, brings me back to Twitter, where the random login name that you choose actually turns into your identity, which is really scary if you think about it. But that's not the only thing that stops people from implementing that. Part of what stops people from implementing it is that it's hard, both on the client and on the server, to actually use the technology that's out there. I said earlier that it's fairly easy to port Samba to any OS, or parts of Samba to any OS that you want. I mean, for most OS, it has been ported today. I don't think there's a lot of activity for Samba on Symbian smartphones, mostly because people don't really use Symbian smartphones to attach to their Windows shares, because that's what people think about when they hear Samba. But the other part that makes it hard is that Samba is built around applications. Samba is not built as an API, as something where you can basically pick and choose the parts that you use, link against them, and then have the infrastructure just come together. And this is, by the way, something where we really should learn from Microsoft. And in general, the open source community seems to have a very hard time learning from Microsoft. And anything but Microsoft approach will give you laughs at any open source conference. The best jokes you can make are jokes at Microsoft's expense. Everyone is just, yeah, give it to them. But the reality is they often get it right. And they spend a lot of time thinking this stuff through. So Microsoft took what was an open technology, DCRCP, and reshaped it, reformed it into the Windows Distributed System Infrastructure, and it turned it into MSRPC because, you know, it has to have MS in its name, and really created something that is very useful, that is very easy to use in parts as an API from within your services, from your client, and has, as a nice little side effect of being a very successful company in penetrating the market, brought this to most every PC on this planet. They haven't been that successful with phones for some reasons. The fact that it takes me like 9 clicks on a Windows mobile device to open my email might have something to do with it. Have you ever used a Windows mobile device? It is a lot of fun. It really gives you appreciation for an iPhone. But what happens here in many of these instances is that the open source community completely drops the ball. They say, oh, this is how Microsoft does it. We have to do it differently. Now, I have to give you guys credit. The Samba community is actually one of the very few communities that from the get-go, I mean, when did you start, John? That was like 44, 45 years ago? sorry. I guess that I found out how old John Terpstra is, and it was one of the few things that made me feel young lately. I have 4-year-old twins, which really makes me feel old. So from the get-go, one of the goals of Samba has been to understand what Microsoft is doing, to implement things that can interoperate, and to be really to learn from what Microsoft is doing. And that is what really, you know, is to me a huge differentiator of this community, something where you guys get it right and where a lot of the open source community is just completely blind. But so how do I envision this working? What is it that I really want to see as a solution of my problem? And you know, this is where the visionary moment comes in. And of course, my answer is, I have no idea, to be honest. I really don't know how we can implement this, especially not given how things are set up today. Every one of these services is set up to be driven by PAM through SSL, to be driven through their own independently developed method of authentication. And as part of a different project that I've been working on, we have approached a couple of these, the larger, the more successful vendors. I mean, as long as they're little, if a company like Intel approaches them and say, hey, we'd like to do something with you, they're all excited. Once they're big, it's like, yeah, whatever. We don't want to change anything. We have this figured out. And it is basically impossible to get people to change the way you authenticate against their services. But there is OpenID. That is a wonderful comment. Yes, I run my own OpenID provider on my personal network, and that is truly, you know, safe, secure, authenticated. That's brilliant. Okay, yeah, OpenID is a great idea. There's some minor flaws in the trust model here. But the way I look at this is, if we have an implementation and a framework and an infrastructure that people can use, and if we, you know, through the means that the open source community is best at, which is simply overrunning the existing implementations, create something that is better and, oh, by the way, free, I think there are opportunities to get at least some of the service providers to have a better, more secure, more trustworthy implementation of authentication for the users that hopefully will spread in this industry. Now, there are a few issues with that, and that I think is in part why I'm here. The way Samba implements GSS SSPI today is kind of incomplete. Not all of the providers are implemented, and again, it's applications, it's not APIs. And the way we would have to approach this with vendors, we being the open source community, this is not an Intel thing I'm talking about, obviously, the way we would have to approach this with vendors would have to be in a way that says, look, this works for everything. This works regardless what client your customer wants to use. So you would kind of have to be compatible to what Microsoft offers. So you'd have to close the gaps there on the providers, on the different authentication mechanisms that are possible. And the other issue that I have here is I work for a large company that has a kind of stunning AD infrastructure. We have, I don't think I'm even allowed to say publicly how big it is. Let's just say, Jeremy was, we used SLED, SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, what was it, 9? I think it was 9, on our first attempts to connect to our networks. And the initial enumeration of Samba took 42 minutes on a state-of-the-art laptop. And we said, there is a problem here. And so Jeremy actually was kind enough back in his Novell days to fix that for us. But there were quite a few more little nits and problems that we ran into. So it's kind of hard today to do this with Samba. It has gotten better a lot over the past year, I have to say that as well. I've looked at Likewise Open for specifically that, connecting to my Active Directory infrastructure, and that's been a lot of fun. And the way Likewise actually tries to implement the infrastructure is kind of different from Samba, in that they actually are trying to implement the APIs. And I know that Krishna is speaking tonight at, what, 5:45, I believe. And I'm sure he's going to talk a lot more about that. In a way, this might answer some of my concerns. But I sit on the Likewise board of advisors, and I know that they don't focus on the mobile world. They, of course, have their own focus on, you know, the industry, the enterprise, and wherever they see the money. So once again, this is an open source project. It's us, the open source community, that needs to figure out how can we actually solve this problem. And this is where I'm really, I guess the goal of this talk today is to get attention for the problem, to get some of the brightest minds thinking about this. You guys know the technology inside out. You all have mobile devices, and if not, you would love to have one, wouldn't you? And since you are A, users of this technology, and B, people who understand the technology, I was kind of hoping to kickstart something here where this becomes a project that the community works on, trying to understand how can we do authentication on mobile devices better than it's been done in the past. How can we get to true network authentication, something that we like, that we trust, that we think is going to, you know, to scale and to work for everyone, and is not just a glorified variation of PAM through SSL. And Jeremy raises his hand. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can Kerberize everything and you can use whatever technology to do it, and everything works on tickets. But then, you know, your mobile device will still have to enter your username and password for every one of the APCs that you want to get tickets from.
I think there's a way around that. I think that's a very good point, but I think there's a way around that. That basically what we want is open. There are people that laugh about OpenID, but the idea is that you can set up your own space, your own ID, and probably multiple ones. You have an Intel ID, you have a Google ID, you know, and you have your own personal. You probably have two or three you want to keep separate anyway.
Yeah.
So what you want to be able to do is when you create an account on Gmail, for example, is to say, Gmail, I'm creating an account. This is my trusted security source for my account here. That's who I want you to trust to verify me.
How's that different from OpenID?
I think that there are a lot of problems with OpenID, but I think that's what the conceptual basis of OpenID makes a lot of sense. Okay, and then what you do is you federate these, and you have them able to talk to each other so they can confer.
So, first answer to your comment, and I see you. First answer to your comment, even that would be an improvement. Even if you Kerberize it and you have to log in everywhere else, at least my login is safe. Ignoring the bad password offline attacks. But what you say is exactly what was going to be my response. If it's my ID, let's ignore the Google.com or Intel.com situation where they want to control the ID. But it's my idea, it's my Flickr, my Twitter, my blog account, then I'm the organization that should be trusted. And wherever I say is my center of trust, they should do it. And by the way, okay, I run my own servers, most people don't. For example, if I say my center of trust is my Google account, then that should be the system that others accept as the source of trusted tickets. Because it's my data they're talking about, so why are they not trusting who I say is trustworthy? Well, that is true, but again, we're talking about my identity. I'm not talking about Facebook's identity. I talk about my identity, so I should get to pick who is trusted. So you've been patient.
I think it's very important to have a basic security concept, because if you look at real life, we have a situation that is quite the same. So you, everybody of us, has a personal ID card that is from our country.
Not in the U.S. There is no globalized ID card.
It's a basic statement where when you're traveling around the world, say, this is my ID card, this is my personality, this is me.
Yeah.
The problem is, even in real life, we will not face a situation that everybody's trapped in this car. Because, to be honest, how many of you have more than one credit So this card is me. The problem is that there are two contrary concepts. The one is, I have one idea that is myself. That would be the trusted source where I can say, okay, I have a central authority who is giving the assurance that this is me, my personality, who you can trust. On the other hand, if I think about this one and only idea getting exposed or identified, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. But see, this is so. You're raising exactly the concern that I had in the beginning with a true single sign-on. Let me be very clear. I'm not suggesting a true single sign-on. For example, I am certainly I have a blog at Intel, which I don't post to for many reasons. But that's a different me because then I'm speaking for Intel than my personal blog. I have a family blog where I talk about my family. And that is, oh no, the light's going away again. And my family blog is a different identity. I keep this very separate from my name, for example, so that people can't connect pictures of my children with me, or them for that matter. Or, for example, my bank account. I would never suggest to use a single sign-on global identity to connect to your bank account. So that wasn't so much the point I was trying to make.
The thing is, on the contrary, I think that the most important choice is that I can choose for a trusted source.
Bingo.
This trusted source should be something that is very secure and basically accepted everywhere. So I have a chance to link something like my personal ID card to such an account, say, this really authenticates myself.
I was with you in the beginning. I'm kind of less with you towards the end. What I was looking for is two parts. One, to get a much more secure infrastructure out and used by everyone. So a ticket-based system, let's get away from the PAM over SSL kind of approach. And two, to be able to choose if and where and when I consolidate these accounts. And basically to choose where is the trust source that authenticates me. And again, OpenID is a starting point for that. It just has flaws in its implementation. But to be able to say, as I use these services, this is how I'm going to authenticate for these services. And for example, a bank may say, no, for liability reasons, we can't do that. We don't know. If you keep your stuff safe, that's fine. But, I mean, come on, Twitter, Facebook, Flickr, my blog. Yeah, I should be able to choose who can claim that they're me. Now, John had asked me to get you guys back on schedule. This is a great discussion. I'll be here until the end of tomorrow. I'd love to have more. John says keep going. Okay, so I'll keep going. John clearly is not as hungry as I am, but I ran 6 miles that morning and he didn't. Jerry.
So, Derek, one problem that I see with this is that companies, you mentioned the banking and the liability aspect, but Facebook doesn't want support calls because you can't log into your site because you screwed up something with your authentication service. I mean, companies, you know, want that perception that everything just works and they don't want to take on the risk of part of their application working, having a good, you know, end user experience resting up on the hands of somebody that they don't know whether they're competent to manage it or another company. You see what I'm saying? So it's how do you address that?
So again, this very much depends. Did people understand what Jerry said? Okay. So it very much depends on the type of relationship you have with these companies. In a case like Twitter, if you forget your password, you're screwed. And so you can call them till the lights go out, and all they can do is set up a new password, which is exactly the same thing as they offering their own ticket-based service. So by default, you simply get their Kerberized identity for login, and they offer their own service. They simply put in the free open source software that they can use, or they can do it based on a Microsoft product. I don't care. But they should, for those of us who understand what they're doing, or for those of us who want to get a partial single sign-on and give that to Google or Microsoft or Yahoo or somebody, they should accept those credentials as well. And now if I call them and say it doesn't work, a perfectly fine answer is, well, that's not our problem, but we'll be happy to reset your account to use our ticket-based system. Perfectly fine answer. I mean, and that's kind of the answer you get today if you call them with a login problem. They basically offer you to send you a clear text email with your password and account in it. I'm not kidding. That's what Facebook does. So I'd rather have them reset my credentials on a ticket-based system.
But there's one problem with what you just said, which is that if you want to say the authority for authenticating me is, you know, my server, my home server in our case, then you leave open the opportunity for social engineering for someone to go to a particular entity and convince them to stop referring to yours and use theirs directly again.
Yeah, I mean, hey. I said I come with more questions than answers. I'm not claiming that I have the answer for this industry. What I'm claiming is that I hate the way it's done today, very, very frankly. I'm not a security expert, but even I look at this and say, oh my, that's just crazy. So I'm looking for ideas, and one of the ideas was, you know, switching to a ticket-based system, figuring out how I can consolidate IDs. Yes, there is always the social engineering component, regardless which solution you pick. That's always going to be possible to work around this. But I think this is a step in the right direction.
I think that if you solve this problem, you might also fix spam at the same time.
Ooh.
Because there's a similarity to a statement that people made.
Well, so the spam problem, conceptually, has been solved. The fact is that the cost of implementing it for the large mail providers is prohibitive. So the compute power necessary to actually verify the signatures would make my employer so happy because, man, they're going to buy servers. I love it. But it's you know, realistically, it's not happening. But you're right, it is actually a somewhat similar problem. So I am hungry. I will declare an end to my presentation. If you have comments and questions, please come to me. Please see Krishna this afternoon. And thank you.